Want applications that can live on-premises or in the cloud? Bring the flexibility of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of TechNet Radio in our Build Your Private Cloud and Hybrid Cloud series. My name is Keith Mayer. I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft, and I have with me back again today my good friend and colleague, Brian Lewis. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Hey, Keith. I'm great. Thanks for having me back.
Sure. Thanks for joining us today. Well, Brian, before we get started, do you want to spend just a few minutes introducing yourself and where you work in the U.S. for Microsoft?
Certainly. So, again, my name is Brian Lewis. I'm an IT Pro Evangelist in the Midwest District. So that's Illinois, Wisconsin, and Indiana for Microsoft, mainly working out of Milwaukee, Chicago, and Indianapolis. But I work with all the community, from user groups, small, medium customers, EPG customers on occasion as well when the account teams bring me in. And then we do a lot of online work. Our whole team does. So certainly you have your blog, I have my blog, and the rest of our 11-member team across the U.S. Is online, and we certainly, I'd love you to communicate with me on there, so if you need to reach me, mythoughtsonit.com is where you can hit me up at.
Awesome. Yeah, well, and I know as you're talking with IT pros in your community, and much like I have been in my community, planning out your private cloud data center fabric has been a kind of a hot topic for a lot of the enterprise-focused IT pros that I've been talking with. And, you know, of course, around that area, we've got storage and networking and compute. What are you hearing from your IT pros? What's the biggest area of cost or concern that they're seeing in their data centers?
Well, the biggest area of cost is always not only the connectivity to your storage, if you're using network storage, whether it's fiber channel or network connectivity, but storage itself. It's the number one cost in this environment. And so I've been doing a lot of work actually with customers looking at ways to reduce that cost. So that's what I'm hearing from them about their top issues or costs, I guess, that they're looking at. And a lot of them are using our server to create their own SAN-type environment using Windows Server 2012 R2.
Well, that's a good point, yeah. So in addition to supporting more of the traditional storage paradigms around iSCSI or fiber channel storage arrays or whatnot. Yeah, you're right. We have that new storage spaces capability and SMB scale-out capability that's built into Windows Server 2012 R2 as well. One of the areas that I'm hearing, I don't know if you're hearing this as well, is that all these various choices, while leveraged correctly, can certainly help to optimize or in some cases reduce cost by leveraging maybe storage spaces with more commodity disk, for instance, for future storage needs. But one of the concerns is that having a mixture of storage platforms really makes overall management of that storage fabric kind of challenging because, you know, oftentimes IT pros have different tools for managing iSCSI versus fiber channel versus their SAS arrays versus clustered scale-out file servers or whatnot. Do you hear that a lot from the IT pros you're talking with as well?
Yeah, I mean, anybody of any size has different, for example, SANs from different manufacturers. They have their old Compellent stuff. They have their EMC stuff. They have, you know, whatever. But they have multiple things, and no one throws it out when they're done. Right, they add and add more, so there's multiple disk stores that they're looking at. And one of the interesting things is one of my customers who has at least four different SANs is also evaluating using Windows Server for a SAN. They're looking at the cost savings. It may not be exactly the same environment, but they're looking at a cost savings of $100,000, right? $120,000 SAN compared to a $20,000 SAN is wow. Kind of the difference there. So it's a huge, huge area to investigate anyway. That's a lot of what I'm seeing.
Yeah, definitely. And then storage management, you know, as you said, it can be a real concern because as IT pros have these four or five or a growing number of storage solutions, a lot of those storage solutions in the past have come with their own point you know, kind of their own individual management solutions. In fact, one of the IT pros, one of the IT pros I've been talking with, actually has four or five different storage tools they use throughout their environment just to manage the various types of storage. So they have one for iSCSI, one for Fibre Channel SANs, one for Fibre Channel SAN fabrics, one for the Fibre Channel switches in their environment, and then they have another tool for managing the Fibre Channel HPAs. And so they find themselves, when it comes time to provision new storage, you think, hey, it's an easy thing. Provision a new LAN out on our on one of our SANs in our data center. They find themselves in and out of four or five different tools, adding to the complexity of building out that storage environment and also the ongoing management of it as well.
Yeah, anybody I ask about that, because I have had those discussions, everybody I've talked to about that is having those issues where, oh, geez, I got another management tool to go into. And trying to remember all those tools can be difficult as well.
And so Brian, you know, a lot of our IT pros obviously have these mixed storage solutions around iSCSI and Fibre Channel and whatnot already. But as they go forward and start adding new storage into their environments to address capacity issues where they need more capacity or perhaps end-of-life issues on their existing SAN or NAS hardware, what are you seeing a lot of your IT pros considering for their next set of storage investments?
With a lot of customers, they're looking at their Fibre Channel and do they want to do more Fibre Channel? And it's so expensive to do Fibre Channel. Are there faster ways to do it? InfiniBand is one thing that has come up at a lot of customer sites. To faster speed than Fibre Channel, a lot lower cost.
And isn't InfiniBand
switch cost?
Isn't InfiniBand kind of expensive? I've always seen that used in like high performance computing clusters and whatnot. Is that becoming more popular? Are you seeing that?
So it's starting to be more popular. Yeah, and the thing is, as far as costs go, you know, it's $500, $600 a network card. And then from a switch perspective, the switches, I'm not saying are, you know, something I can afford for my lab, but certainly in an enterprise, they're a lot less expensive, probably on the order of four times cheaper than a switch for Fibre Channel. So they're still expensive, but they're not as expensive. And so you can get better performance, theoretically up to 56 gigabit per second, I believe it is, for the latest spec. They've been around forever. They have a lot lower heat signature on the network cards than the Fibre Channel cards do, or even than 10 gig Ethernet does. But 10 gig Ethernet is another way people are looking to go as well. And then on top of that, they're looking at SMB3. I had even heard one EMC representative state that they saw it as the future. I know we were talking about that earlier, and I said I hadn't read that, but that is something I've heard them state. You mentioned that you saw something online about that?
Yeah, they actually have a white paper. EMC and NetApp and many of our storage partners that have appliance devices in the NAS space, they've actually seen such huge improvements with SMB3.0, just over 10 gig Ethernet. And in the future, we see a lot of environments actually looking at even 40 gig Ethernet as well. It's on the horizon too. But they've seen such advantages from a simplicity, lower cost per port, like you were just referencing, and performance standpoint, that they're really touting that as the next storage protocol, the next major storage protocol for Windows Server, Windows Client type storage connectivity.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I did just read that that Samba 4.1 is out as well, and that's supporting that SMB3.0 protocol now.
Yeah, definitely. Our storage team's done a great job of making the SMB3.0 specification an open specification that anyone can adopt as part of their storage stack. And the way I liken it in a private cloud or virtualization environment is SMB is sort of our remote mount point technology for storage in the same way that in, say, like a VMware vSphere environment, NFS would be used. But one of the differences that I've been seeing as other vendors implement SMB3.0, like Samba or NetApp or EMC, is that SMB3.0 seems to be a much tighter specification in terms of how it's engineered, how the engineering specs are developed, for supporting some of the advanced performance and multi-channel capabilities and remote DMA capabilities. And as a result, I'm seeing much more consistency across the SMB3.0 implementations on storage vendors, where over the years, you've probably seen this as well, the NFS implementations that a lot of different storage vendors do leave a lot of, the specification for NFS leaves a lot of room open for creative engineering, if you will, and not as being a formalized spec.
I've looked a little bit at the difference from NFS to SMB3. So NFS has a new spec, version 4, mm-hmm. But version 4 from, I read a white paper by IBM that as they compared the specs and booster and all that, they also point out that most implementations hadn't moved to 4. Right. But even so, they in their white paper specify that they think SMB3 is the future.
Yeah.
And pick it as a winner over NFS. It's a pretty interesting space right now to look at.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and certainly that means that storage is going to continue to be a multi-platform investment that most enterprises are continuing to support around existing Fibre Channel and iSCSI arrays and other storage solutions. And then as they move forward, potentially SMB3.0-based solutions. And that's where I see one of the big advantages around System Center 2012 R2 VMM coming into place for storage, because you know it used to be in the old days that our System Center tools were focused predominantly on managing Windows-centric storage, but now the VMM team's done a great job of including some of the new storage management specifications like SMIS so that VMM can easily manage any storage devices or storage fabrics that support the SMIS protocol standard for management. So it could be Fibre Channel arrays, Fibre Channel switch fabrics, iSCSI arrays, and then certainly we continue to have strong support for managing Windows-centric storage solutions like our SMB3.0 scale-out file servers as well. Are you seeing the same thing from your side?
Yeah, it's interesting because we had talked about that a little while ago. One of the things that people have a problem with is as they have different SANs and different back-end technologies for their storage, they have all these different tools to manage it. And as you mentioned, VMM in Server 2012 or in System Center 2012 R2, VMM is a great tool to use those technologies you just spoke about to basically solidify that into a one-page management, one frame there. So that's a real great aspect of our tooling to bring that into one environment, even if you have multiple back-end SANs.
Yeah, definitely. And for making it easy to take that next step on a go-forward basis for IT pros that are interested in moving forward with SMB3.0 as their next major storage investment area, one of the cool features that the R2 release of VMM also has is bare metal provisioning of entire scale-out file server clusters where you can plug in, two new file server hosts that aren't provisioned even with an operating system on it, and have VMM build the Windows operating system on those file servers, cluster them together, bring in the storage, create cluster shared volumes, create the file shares for presenting that out over SMB3.0 to the other hosts in your environment, all from within a logical workflow process that VMM in the R2 release is managing. This makes it really easy to get on board with SMB3.0 from that standpoint.
Yeah, and as far as leveraging new servers and bringing up another set of servers for storage, all that, think about how easy that is. You rack it, as opposed to sitting in front of there with the USB stick or the DVD, right, and going through each one and configuring everything at the machine. Talk about a time savings, really nice. Yeah, that's cool.
Definitely. Well, Brian, what do you say? Does it make sense to drop over into our lab and take a look at some of the new features of the R2 release around storage with Virtual Machine Manager together in a little more detail?
Yeah, that sounds great. We're going to go walk over to your lab again.
Yeah, so I'll meet you over in the lab. So, Brian, here we are over in our lab, and we're looking at the System Center 2012 R2 Virtual Machine Manager console. And when we're looking at this console over in the lower left area of the console, you'll notice that I'm on the fabric workspace. That's the workspace in VMM that we'd use for managing the physical elements of our data center. So virtualization servers, networking definitions or networking devices, and our topic for today, which is storage. So when we expand out storage, you'll see there's several pieces that we can use to bring our storage environment into VMM and classify it. One of the cool things that I really like about VMM is that under classifications and pools, it allows us to create our own customized classifications to organize our various storage arrays and storage pools based on a set of criteria that make sense in our environment. So you'll notice here I've got my storage organized with classifications of gold, silver, and bronze for the various types of storage pools that I have to indicate different performance of each of those pools. But could be that you want to organize by capacity. It could be that you want to organize by topology, have all your fiber channel versus your iSCSI versus your SMB3O file shares, for instance, organized that way. And the real value this has is it allows us to intelligently abstract a complex number of different storage devices away from the decision points we make when we're provisioning new virtual machines and have to decide what storage to use for those virtual machines. Because once we have our classification set up and our storage devices brought into VMM, when we're provisioning a new VM, we can say, hey, this is a high-performance VM, has very high IOPS from a storage standpoint that it requires. So I don't really care what storage it's placed on as long as it's placed on gold storage. Or maybe it's a VM that's more of a dev or test workload that doesn't have quite the same IOPS level. Again, I can provision that VM and say, let me provision this on bronze storage in my case. And then what VMM will do is, as it's going through its intelligent placement routines, it'll say, okay, you're looking for gold or bronze storage. Well, here's the storage arrays that meet that criteria that are classified in that way. Here's the available capacity across those storage arrays that are classified in the same under that same matching tag. And here's where I'm going to intelligently recommend that that VM storage be placed. So it allows us to take out of the equation having to have an intimate knowledge of all the various storage repositories in our data center every time we're just trying to do something simple like provision a new VM. Do you see IT pros using those types of features yourself, Brian?
Well, I see a lot of people, you know, not doing it automatically yet. They're doing it from a perspective of, you know, I've got this storage, which is where my production stuff goes, and I got to be careful because it's so darn expensive and it's going to fill up. So then when I go and create test VMs, well, they have to get stored over on this less expensive storage, either my old SAN that's on its way out or on some other local attached disk or some other aspect. So, yeah, people do this all the time because of the cost of storage.
Yeah, definitely. It's really easy to create your own classifications. You can just go up to the ribbon bar, click on Create Storage Classification, and give it a name and description. And then as you bring in your storage, you can just classify it according to which category of the ones you've defined it fits into. Now, in order to then go to that next step of we've set up our classifications, now we want to start bringing in our storage devices into VMM so that we have a single console in VMM to manage all those different aspects of storage instead of having to use all those various tools. In VMM, what we can do is up in our ribbon bar, we can click on the Add Resources button. And under Add Resources, as we scroll down to the bottom, you'll see storage devices listed there. And when I click on the Storage Devices button, it'll bring up our Add Storage Devices wizard. Now, the first thing the wizard's going to ask me for is to select the type of the storage device or array or provider that I wish to bring into VMM. So if it's a Windows-based scale-out file server, I can leave the default choice selected. But if I have SAN or NAS storage devices that support either an industry standard SMIS provider, the storage management interface protocol, or if they're an older device that has a Windows storage management provider, an SMP provider, I can just select the appropriate device type and then bring in those particular SAN arrays. When I select one of those SAN arrays, it'll ask me for the IP address information for connecting to it, and then I'll need to define my credentials for authenticating to that SAN array with access to be able to monitor and provision that SAN array. But in addition to just bringing in storage devices or Windows-based file servers, one of the other new features that VMM has is I can bring in entire fiber channel switch fabrics, because many of the fiber channel switches that are out there are also managed through SMIS. So this allows me to do not only provisioning of new storage pools and LUNs through VMM, but I can also, in a fiber channel environment, do zoning of those new LUNs into specific worldwide names that are sitting up on my hosts or on my VMs if I'm using our virtual fiber channel support that Hyper-V extends into the VM. So I can manage everything across these storage devices once I've brought them all into VMM from a single management console. And I've already gone through the process of bringing in a few, couple different providers. I've got an iSCSI array and a file server cluster. As you bring in each of those storage providers, you'll see them listed under your providers folder in the storage area of your Fabric workspace. And once those providers are brought in, it'll tell us which protocol it's using to communicate. So in this case, I've got an iSCSI array using SMIS, and I've got a Windows file server, a scale-out file server cluster that we're using the Windows management protocols to connect to. So for each of those providers, the next step is VMM begins inventorying those storage providers. So what kind of storage pools and what kind of existing LUNs are already on those storage providers that VMM should know about? And it'll bring those down under arrays and under file servers for the file server shares that are set up on our scale-out cluster. So under arrays, you'll see I've got a clustered storage space that's part of my scale-out file server listed, and I've got an iSCSI storage array, and it shows me the capacity that's in use and available and how it's carved out. In this case, this iSCSI array is carved out into three separate storage pools. Under file servers, I can see my scale-out file servers, so it automatically detects all those scale-out clustered file server roles when you plug in your Windows file server cluster information as a storage provider. And then under each of the scale-out file servers, it'll list each of those file shares. Now, for each of those arrays or file server shares, I can then tag it with the appropriate classification that I've previously set up. And if I have any fiber channel fabrics, any switches that I'm managing through SMIS, they'll appear under the fiber channel fabrics area, and I can see those switches and go into the properties and manage those switches from there. Makes it pretty easy to have a consolidated view of all of the storage in your environment. What do you think so far, Brian? Does it make sense?
That is really cool. The ease of seeing what you have set up in your environment and be able to configure it all from that one spot. I like it a lot.
Yeah, and it's important that IT pros understand that we can use this not only to just see what's out there, what available storage is out there, and classify it, but we also have the active capabilities of being able to provision that storage right from VMM as well. So if we were using an iSCSI array, for instance, we can create new logical units, new LUNs, on our iSCSI or fiber channel arrays right from within VMM to carve that disk space out. Or if it's a file server cluster, we can create new file shares to carve out that disk space and be able to present it out to other hosts on the network.
And that's really cool. That's not just to a Windows Server iSCSI storage array, right? That's you're using Starwind, it looks like there. So it's to anybody's iSCSI storage array.
Yep, as long as they're supporting SMIS or SMP. Since those are two standard protocols that many array manufacturers support and many fabric providers support, it becomes a common language that VMM can use for being able to manage those storage devices. And then once we've got our storage carved out, we can go one step further and drill over into our virtualization hosts, again, still from within VMM, and go into the properties. Inside one or more of our virtualization hosts, you'll see a storage page, and I can then add in those iSCSI arrays. You'll see I've got the iSCSI array already added into one of my hosts here. I could add in my fiber channel arrays. I could add in my file shares. I could add in any of the LUNs that were provisioned as disks. Right from here, do all of that iSCSI or fiber channel mapping that typically I'd have to go down to the operating system level of those hosts to otherwise do and bring up an iSCSI initiator or a fiber channel HBA configuration tool in order to implement. So I can do it all over the network, all remotely from a centralized VMM console.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so VMM really has come a long way in allowing us to collapse our view of the storage world across all these different technologies into a single set of pools that are classified consistently that then when we're going to the point of using VMM to build out private clouds, we can associate just certain classifications with certain private clouds and delegate out to portions of our IT or development or DevOps teams the ability to have a subset of resources. So it makes our environment a lot easier to manage going forward, in this case from a storage standpoint, by putting these additional abstraction layers in place between our physical environment and our actual view of resource consumption. Great. Well, what do you say? Should we head back to the office and finish up our episode today, Brian?
That sounds good. Let's go make the trek.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, hey, Brian, thanks so much for joining us for today's episode and helping walk through all those exciting new features that we saw in the lab in VMM in the System Center 2012 R2 release around managing storage. I think that's really going to make a big impact in a lot of the IT pros environments that I speak with and helping them better manage and present storage across a pretty complex private cloud fabric. What do you think?
Well, I just want to say thanks for having me in and also having me to your lab again. But, you know, I think people have gotten a lot out of the storage aspects today to understand that SMB is the way of the future, to understand that from a single console they can manage all of their storage devices on the back end, you know, and to start to evaluate network storage using whether it's Ethernet or whether it's InfiniBand, to start looking at those other aspects. I hope people, you know, really gotten a lot out of today.
I think so. I think it really is an impressive array of technologies as well. And the great news is that for IT pros that want to go that next step and learn a little bit more about storage spaces, about SMB 3.0 and scale-out file server clusters, down at the bottom of this page, there's some great links that you can click on to launch into step-by-step resources, guided hands-on labs, live virtual lab environments, so that you can walk through that process yourself and get a better hands-on feeling of how VMM and some of the new Windows Server features in Server 2012 R2 around storage can be leveraged to really create a much more cost-effective and enterprise-grade and centrally manageable storage fabric for your private cloud environments. Well, thank you everyone as well for watching us today and tuning into our episode. I hope you'll join us next time when we'll be talking about the System Center 2012 R2 Compute Fabric updates that allow us to manage a diverse set of virtualization hosts across our various private clouds and our on-premises data centers. Until then, have a great rest of your day and look forward to seeing you on TechNet Radio during our next episode.